Well, there's a comment from a listener that came in after yesterday's program. We're going to talk right now with Dave Jenkins, who's president of Conservatives for Responsible Stewardship. He's a lifelong conservative. Jenkins is also an expert on the evolving energy market and also on Florida's climate risks and the importance of adding more solar power in the Sunshine State. And Dave Jenkins is on the phone. Dave.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on. So tell us a little bit more about your group, Conservatives for Responsible Stewardship.
Well, we're pretty much what the name says. We're conservatives who care about stewardship, conservation, protecting, you know, the natural resources that our nation's been blessed with. And so that's what we're really about, because we think, you know, conservation is conservative. They come from the same root word.
Tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, like you said, I'm a lifelong Republican, conservative. I worked on campaigns growing up. Everybody from Jesse Helms and Ronald Reagan to Strom Thurmond, and later, you know, Bob Dole, George H.W. Bush. So yeah, I've been in the political realm quite a while, but I've also worked in the nonprofit side on you know, trying to advance that stewardship part of things. And so that's what's landed me here with my current organization, which I've been at for over a decade.
Mm-hmm. Jesse Helms and Strom Thurmond, pretty far to the right on the political spectrum. Where do you live?
Well, I'm in the D.C. area now, but I'm originally from North Carolina.
And okay,
I went to college
all right.
In South Carolina at Furman, yeah, so. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it says here in your bio that you're an expert on the evolving energy market and Florida's climate risks and the importance of adding more solar power in the Sunshine State. In Tallahassee right now, there's some proposed legislation that would take away the power from local governments to format or to produce their own energy policy. One of the pieces of legislation is HB 856, another is HB 839. There's a whole bunch of legislation in Tallahassee, and that's why your group asked to come on, MNF. What do you think about these efforts in Tallahassee to say to local governments you can no longer set your energy policy?
Well, to us, it's really kind of flies in the face of what we've always thought conservatism usually pushes for, because you know, we've always said on the Republican side too, you know, if you put it in the political sphere, I've said that the best government is the government that's the closest to the people. So, you know, conservatives have typically favored local government over state government, and state and local government over federal government. The thought being that the most local elected officials have their finger on the best on the pulse of what their constituents want to have happen. And so, you know, a lot of the communities and municipalities in recent years have realized that they could save money on their municipal electricity bill, which then saves taxpayers money using lower cost sources of energy like solar. The price of solar has gone down so much, and they could guarantee that low price for 20 years and things like that. And so utilities and especially the natural gas industry have been going around lobbying lawmakers to preempt those localities from making any kind of laws related to energy, because they want to be insulated from that transition and those market pressures of people trying to find cheaper energy. If it's not their energy, the one they sell, then they would like to stop people's choice to do that. And doesn't sound very democratic, and doesn't sound very conservative to us.
The conservatives always argue that if a local government says we want to have more solar energy, or if we want to ban new installation of natural gas in houses or businesses, the conservatives here in Florida argue, well, you're putting your thumb on the market. So therefore, they say that's not a market-based solution when a local government would say go solar or encourage solar. They're saying let the market decide.
Yeah, you know, those same lawmakers would likely not have a problem if they were saying, well, go exclusively gas or go exclusively coal. The thing is, they've been educated or misinformed is a better word, by the utilities and the energy industry to believing things that are no longer true. Used to, it was true that coal and natural gas were the cheapest sources of energy, but it's not true anymore. As coal plants and natural gas plants get older, they become more costly in terms of their maintenance and operating expenses. And that in turn makes the electricity coming from those plants more expensive. So right now, in some states, we have solar energy selling as low as $14 a megawatt hour. And we have some coal plants that are producing electricity for $80 a megawatt hour or even higher. And so that is quite a difference. So if you've got if you're a municipal leader and you're saying, okay, so here's our energy bill and here's what it could be, and the thing is, it's taxpayers that pay that energy rate, right? So they want to do that benefit for their taxpayers and tax base and have more revenue to do other things with. Why would you forbid them from doing that? That, in my view, that's putting your thumb on the market.
Our guest is Dave Jenkins. He's president of Conservatives for Responsible Stewardship. He's an advocate for greener energy, but he thinks that that's what the market would like too. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Our email address, dj@wmnf.org. When you talk about the lower cost of solar versus coal, the other problem with coal is that you create a lot of coal ash, which is toxic, and you've got to store it somewhere and get rid of it. Even though you've got solar panels that may, after 30 years, live out their life, I think the toxicity of the coal ash is a much bigger problem than disposing of the solar panels.
Well, yeah, I mean, the thing is, energy, there's no red or blue or left or right energy. I mean, energy is energy. It's just a thing. And so the smart choice on energy evolves over time. It can vary from state to state, but in general, cheaper is better than expensive, cleaner is better than dirty, and infinite is better than finite. If you can do cleaner energy and you can deal with things like climate change and air pollution and coal ash and stuff like that, if you can get rid of that and make the situation better, and at the same time lower people's electricity bills by just leaning into the market. I mean, that's what conservatives always said: follow the market, right? They don't like things like AOC's Green New Deal, which kind of runs a counter to the market and wants to do social engineering stuff like that. But they've always said follow the market. Well, the thing is that there was a time when that really didn't go along with what we needed to do to protect our climate and our environment. But today it does go along with it. So you can follow the market. By following the market, you can address climate change, because the market is saying solar's cheaper than coal and gas. It's saying wind is cheaper than coal and gas. In some cases, even nuclear is cheaper than coal and gas now. There's no reason to not really lean into this and try to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions by just following the market.
I was surprised in the press material that your group sent to me. You say that the Sunshine State, Florida, receives less than 3% of its power from solar energy, and Vermont, which is way up north, gets five times that. That's pretty surprising. I didn't know that.
Indeed. Florida ranks way down near the bottom in terms of solar. And if you compare them to other states that have the similar solar intensity, like Nevada and California and Arizona, they fare pretty poorly. And the other thing is that those states have renewable energy or clean energy standards in place that will push to basically 50% renewable by like the 2030, 2035 time frame. So, 9, 10, 12, 13 years from now, they'll be getting half of their energy from solar and wind in some cases. Florida has no such standard or goal. They don't even have a long-term goal, you know, for 2050 or anything like that. So there's no incentive for these utilities to really change their ways and diversify their power sources, because all they got to do is if they're using more expensive electricity from coal, is to go to the Public Service Commission and say, oh, well, we need to raise our rates, which is what they're doing right now. They're all three, FPL, Duke, TECO, they have all requested permission from the Public Service Commission to increase electricity rates for the customers. And that's because, you know, FPL gets 75% of its power generation from natural gas. Coal and gas account for more than 98% of Duke's generation and more than 90% of TECO's. They're just not diversified.
And you want them to go faster. They are making some small strides towards solar, but you want them to go faster.
Yeah, it's a funny thing. I mean, FPL, for example, they boast all the time about their solar investments and going green and stuff, but they've been doing that for years, and yet we don't see that percentage ticking up at all. Mm-hmm. Whereas in other states where they're doing the same thing, you're seeing those gains being reflected in the amount of solar, you know, the percentage of solar that makes up their portfolio.
Dave, you're the head of a group called Conservatives for Responsible Stewardship. Do you do any lobbying, and do you do any sort of face-to-face meetings with Republicans in state legislatures or Congress? And if so, you know, if you're talking to maybe a Republican from West Virginia or one of the other coal states, what is that conversation like?
Well, we do that kind of thing. We do educate lawmakers. Here lately, I've spent more of my time talking to lawmakers in Nevada and Arizona just before the pandemic hit. And then once the pandemic hit, there was a little bit less of that going on.
Yeah.
You know, it becomes very clear when you're talking to someone from, say, a coal state or something like that, that, you know, they have been through years and years of hearing that industry side of an argument. And a lot of times those kind of arguments are actually no longer accurate. They're stuck in arguments that, like, I'll give you an example. In Arizona, the legislature was trying to pass, some legislation that would prevent the utility board from pushing clean energy and stuff like that. And they said that it would ban important low-cost energy sources. It wouldn't ban anything. But anyway, that was their rhetoric. And they were talking about coal and gas when in Arizona, solar is the cheapest form of energy. So the coal plant in Arizona that's providing most of the electricity is the one that's $80 a megawatt hour, compared to solar, which is, and with battery storage for ninth generation, which is going for, in the 20s, $22 a megawatt hour. And so they're arguing that the energy source that's cheapest is actually the ones that are most expensive right now because they've not updated their talking points to, the market trends. And, you know, the coal industry is not really keen on alerting them to the fact that their product no longer wins out in terms of price.
Hmm. Dave, you're part of the Republican Party, or were for many years. I don't know if you still are, but I assume you are. And you've worked for Jesse Helms and Strom Thurmond. You know, today the folks that kind of bear the mantle of Jesse Helms and Strom Thurmond are like the Tea Party people and the Trump people. I mean, I think Jesse Helms and Donald Trump would be seeing eye to eye, simpatico today. You know, there's this whole conspiracy theory among some Republicans. They call it the Agenda One conspiracy theory, where they claim that the United Nations and governments are colluding to wipe out 90% of the global population, that all you environmentalists are part of this conspiracy. And, you know, that you want to see the planet ridded of people. I don't know if you've run across fellow Republicans that still subscribe to Agenda 21. They're out there. I've met them. What do you say back to them?
Well, first of all, there's a lot of crazy stuff out there that, and I, as a nonprofit, we frame things more in the conservative versus liberal kind of frame as opposed to Republican and Democrat. But there's a lot of crazy stuff. I mean, whether you go in down the QAnon thing or the stuff you're talking about, and it goes under the guise of conservatism. But if you look back in history at true conservatives, whether you can go back to Reagan, you can go back to Barry Goldwater, you can go back wherever you want to go. Teddy Roosevelt actually was conservative, and people like to put a progressive label on. What they believed, all those values that they believed in, and you know, conservatism has always supposed to have been about like prudence and basing what you do on facts rather than emotion, and you know, personal responsibility and things like that, values and stuff. And here we have we're in some kind of like parallel universe, it seems like, where people with all sorts of nutty ideals, they think they can get them popular by simply slapping a conservative label on it. That doesn't make them conservative. It's just what they call them. And then, you know, the media actually compounds this problem, because if they see something nutty on the political right that some of these nuts are claiming is conservative, well, that works fine for them. They start calling it conservative too, like just the environmental issue that we were talking about. You hear some kind of anti-environment position, no matter what it is, someone will call it the conservative position. But it's not. I mean, there's nothing conservative about it. Conservative is being cautious and taking care of things and being responsible. And these things run completely counter to that.
Well, our guest is Dave Jenkins. He's a lifelong conservative, and now he's president of Conservatives for Responsible Stewardship. And you're listening to an interview with him live on 88.5 FM. If you want to send a question in, you can email us here in the studio. The address is dj@wmnf.org. Dave, the most powerful people in our state government are the lobbyists. And the lobbyists represent giant office buildings and insurance companies and trucking companies, and they represent the beer distributorships and, you know, you name your industry. If those industries were able to save money by lower electric utility costs, why wouldn't they be lobbying right now in Tallahassee for more solar and lobbying against the utility company rate increases that you talked about? I mean, these are the powerful folks, the folks that run these giant factories and other things. What are they lobbying on behalf of solar, or are they on the sidelines? Where are they?
Well, a lot of them are indeed pushing for more renewable energy and stuff, because, you know, a lot of the big companies, they actually have their own renewable energy internal company goals, and they'll have a lot of them will have a carbon footprint goals where they want to reduce their carbon footprint. And so to do that, they need to locate their businesses in a state that actually facilitates or makes it easy for them to meet those goals. If you go to Florida, unfortunately, that's going to be hard to meet those goals, because none of the utilities that you're going to be, you know, you're going to be in their service area, none of them have enough of that renewable electricity that they produce right now to help you meet your goal. So if you're looking at Florida and you're saying, well, okay, this is the situation here, and it also comes back to cost too, you know, the rates will keep going up there, then they'll just say, well, okay, we'll locate in Nevada or Arizona or some other state. I mean, heck, North Carolina and Georgia are beating Florida in the amount of solar energy as well. So the state is losing out. And so, yeah, you would think that they would lobby some, but they may just simply be picking up their marbles and going somewhere else. The people who are not picking up their marbles and going somewhere else are people like Florida Power and Light, who have an incredibly influential lobby in the legislature. And the thing is that people, I think a lot of people that are elected just don't realize how much wool is being pulled over their eyes by these utilities.
Hmm. Dave, how about taking a call or two from one of our listeners?
Sure.
If you've got time. Dave Jenkins is our guest. He's the president of Conservatives for Responsible Stewardship. And let's go to Ellen in St. Petersburg, who's calling in. Hi, Ellen. What's your question for Dave?
Yeah, I do have a question. But first, I want to commend Mr. Jenkins for his accurate description of what true conservatism means and how the media on both sides skews that definition or identity. So my question is really about the solar panels, because I really don't know that much about them. I have heard complaints about their short lifespan and how they're stored. Can he explain that a little bit? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thanks, Ellen. Thank you.
Okay. We haven't really ran into much of a problem. Today's solar panels are a lot different than, say, the disco era solar panels that Carter put on the White House back in 1979. they're much more technologically advanced, and we've not really been hearing any kind of problem with people not getting adequate life span out of solar panels. I mean, we have obviously anything new. I mean, it's just like the vaccine, you know, you get it now, you don't know how long it's going to last because it's new. But what we've seen, we haven't seen any issues in that regard. And the other thing is with, the thing that's really transformed the solar energy right now is battery storage. Because, you know, used to the whole adage, and you still see solar getting hit with this, is that, oh, well, it only produces power while the sun shines. Well, that's no longer true anymore. So what happens is you get these big utility scale solar facilities. They have battery storage to go along with the solar. And so they store up the energy they collect during the day, and then they release it at nighttime when the sun's not shining. And, they used to say the same thing about, like, you know, Priuses when they first came out. They said, oh, well, those batteries are not going to last very long, and then you're going to be stuck. Well, there's plenty of original Priuses, still on the road that's got over 100,000 miles, and those batteries are still going strong. So I think a lot of that is just speculation that drives that kind of thing. And of course, you know, with anything, when its life expectancy runs out, you want to figure out how you're going to dispose of it, environmentally in a good way. But I think a lot of the predictions on lifespan have not borne out, and I'm pretty confident that today's technology is going to last plenty long. And you know, the thing is what they're competing with is things like coal and gas, and those plants have an average lifespan. Coal plants have about a 40-year lifespan, and natural gas plants have a 25 to 30-year lifespan. So as long as you're in those kind of ballparks, then you're pretty much what the industry standard is.
And was I right earlier when I said solar panels have a life of about 30 years or so?
Well, that's what the ones that are 30 years old are not the solar panels that we're building today, right? So, solar panels from 30 years ago are having about that kind of lifespan. But as technology improves, we expect them to have longer lifespans.
Okay. Dave, let's take one more question, and it's from another Dave. This Dave is in Tampa. Dave, thanks for calling. You're on with Dave Jenkins of Conservatives for Responsible Stewardship.
Hey, good morning. I have a quick comment and a question. The comment is, I'm listening to you talk about the cost of energy, and it seems to me that is, the cost is the sum of its parts, and what energy producers and all corporations do is attempt to externalize costs. Costs such as environmental degradation and the health effects of their products, those get externalized. They don't get incorporated into the price of their products, and therefore it's a distorted number. If you incorporate those costs, then the price goes up and alternatives become more competitive. And I haven't heard you talk, maybe I missed it, but it seems to me that's fundamental to this discussion. Secondly, as a conservative, my question is, do you support not the outright elimination of utilities, but a overhaul of their function? Because it seems to me now, as a conservative, you would allow me to, if I owned a shopping center, to put solar up on the rooftops of my buildings and maybe even create a small utility, a cooperative utility. As I understand Florida law now, you can't do that. We're prevented from combining either as neighborhoods or as businesses to generate energy as we see fit from our own property. That's protecting utilities. Am I off base here, or are you onto this? Is this something you're working on, and how do we tackle that?
Yeah, well, like I mentioned earlier, is the utilities in Florida, they're all considered monopoly utilities, even though you've got several of them. they have captive customer bases. So in other words, if you're a FP&L customer and Duke had cheaper electricity, you can't say, oh, well, I want to go over and get electricity from Duke. So, you know, opening that up and having that competition would actually, in a market today where solar is winning out on price and wind is winning out on price, that would provide a direct incentive for these utilities to start, you know, investing and diversifying in the sources that are cheapest, because they would be competing directly against each other. But they're not competing directly against each other because they have that captive customer base. So as long as the PSC will allow them to raise rates, they don't really care about the cost of electricity. What they care about is the lifespan of these old plants, trying to milk them for as long as they can, but they're milking them on the back of ratepayers. And so the externalities you talked about, yeah, I didn't get into that, but you're exactly right. There's tons of externalities, especially with coal and to a lesser degree in natural gas, that should, you know, if you're really doing the right kind of accounting, be taken into account. But the thing we face now is that even just forgetting about that for a moment, solar and wind are still beating coal and gas, just on a straight up thing, just not even taking into account that they're lesser impact on the environment. And then the other thing, more you were talking about with distributed solar, which is when people put solar panels and stuff on their houses. The thing that really allows that to happen, and people to profit off of it and make it sort of financially viable for a lot of folks, is something called net metering. And there is net metering in Florida, but the utilities, every single chance they get, they try to make it less attractive to the producer that's not a utility. So whether it's a business or a homeowner, you know, they don't, I mean, there's nothing they hate more than having to buy electricity from somebody they think they should be selling electricity to. So they're
buying it at avoided cost, which is also distorted, right? I mean, they get to buy, they get it at avoided cost is what they have to pay us. And that number is artificially low, is it not?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. So they don't want to give customers that, they don't give folks with distributed solar that rate. They want them to pay pretty much like, they want to get a cheaper rate from them, but then when they sell it back to other people, they want to get obviously the retail price.
All right. Dave, thanks a lot. Thanks for your call. Thank you. All right. Mm-hmm. Before we go, Dave Jenkins, what do you think of the Green New Deal?
Not a fan. Green New Deal is a resolution. It's not a bill or anything like that. It was just a resolution with a bunch of goals. And, you know, some of the goals are fine, but there was a lot of stuff in there, you know, guaranteeing, good paying jobs for everyone or, you know, I mean, there's just a whole bunch of stuff in there that, frankly, has nothing to do with climate. It's just guaranteeing fair wages, guaranteeing there's no unfair competition in business. You know, all those kind of things. And while they might sound nice, the thing is when you put all these things out there, one, how are you going to do it, and two, how are you going to pay for it? It just seems like that you're losing sight of the real goal here. If we're tackling climate, what we need to do is have legislation that's focused on climate specifically, not get out into social issues or you know, go all over the board with things. You need something targeted. And you also, with the Green New Deal, they don't really lean into the market. They kind of want to go sort of separate from the market and do their own thing. And when you've got an energy market that's now favoring clean energy, to us, that just doesn't make a lot of sense. Why not leverage that market power to help us solve the problem rather than ignore the market and try to solve it through other means? And so, you know, we think the Green New Deal would be a bad deal and that it would be very costly. when there's plenty of other ways to do this. You know, you could even do a fee and dividend proposal like former Reagan official Jim Baker and the late George Shultz came up with. And you could do something like that, or you could just simply do these electricity standards where you're telling the utilities, hey, you need to get to this point in renewables by X date. And then they know that's the lay of the land, and their investments will then start reflecting that. Whereas if they don't, if everybody's all over the board with the goals in that regard, then some of them are going to stay in the old ways and invest in new gas plants or something, or try to keep propping up their old coal plants, and while others will understand it and invest in solar. But what we need is everybody going in the same direction. And so setting those, if each state would set aggressive standards, especially, you know, the Sunshine State, you could move those utilities along to do the right thing, and it would help ratepayers. It would ultimately help the utilities in the long run, because they would be invested in a cheaper source of electricity. You know, once you build those solar plants, the fuel is free. So it's all upfront cost. You don't have to worry about the price of natural gas going up and down.
Well, Dave, I think you've reestablished your conservative credentials with that. Thank you. I know you're paying attention to what's going on in Tallahassee regarding the state legislature and its efforts to get involved in local energy policy. Can people find out more on your website?
Yes, they should go to our website and hit the Action Center. And our website is www.conservativestewards.org. And if you go on the Action Center, you can actually send emails to your legislators telling them, you know, you don't like that, basically. So.
Well, Dave Jenkins, thanks a lot. Thanks for coming on WMNF.
Well, yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, great to have you here. That's Dave Jenkins. He is president of Conservatives for Responsible Stewardship, and he's an environmentalist and a lifelong conservative. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. We're going to switch gears and talk about some other topics here, and then we'll